households in the U.S. that have dogs as part of their dwellings in their family. And I think there's something 43 million have cats. So cat people, I don't want to leave you out of this conversation, but let's talk. I would love to talk about the idea in getting a animal companion in your life, whether to go to a breeder or to go to a shelter. Let's talk about that. What are the advantages of both?
Well, a couple of things. We've done both. Our Bernese Mountain Dogs were from a breeder. And while we were doing that, my youngest daughter kept kind of trying to talk to us about the fact that the shelters were overrun with dogs, and that we needed to stop buying dogs from breeders and start getting dogs through shelters. The good news, bad news, I mean, there's the problem with purebred dogs is they tend to be more susceptible to sickness, to disease. So that's something to consider. I think the more overwhelming thing is that we have a crisis with dog shelters in this country, and that from a moral point of view and an ethical point of view, it's better, and this is just my judgment, right? It's better to go to a shelter to get a dog. And you could, you know, all kinds of varieties of dogs are there. Our last two dogs, Toby is from a shelter. He was returned to a shelter 3 or 4 times before we got him. And Maisie was a street dog that my daughter found abandoned. And ultimately we ended up adopting it. Adopting her. But I think if I could have one piece of advice, it would be go to the shelters, help us out, because we're still euthanizing dogs in this country, which to me is a great crime. And it's not the dog's fault, it's a human problem, because we abandon dogs, we don't get dogs neutered or spayed, and we end up with having just dogs in shelters that are overwhelmed. So if you want a new dog, if you want a dog, go to the shelter.
Well, let's talk about, okay, if we go to a shelter, mm-hmm. we don't really know the background of this dog.
It's
like the first few months of a dog's life, maybe is very impactful. So training a rescue dog, talk about that. Help us with that.
Sure. So I'll use Toby, our Great Pyrenees, as an example. We have no idea about his background. When we adopted him and brought him to our house, he wanted nothing to do with us. He just kind of scoped out the yard, scoped out the house, found a couch, and just sat there. What we learned is that, like a human being going having a history of trauma, what they need is reliability, they need patience, they need a regular schedule. And I think what I learned from both Toby and Maisie is that dogs are resilient. The first 3 months of a dog's life are crucially important, but they don't set in stone a dog's behavior. Dogs can bounce back, just like human beings can bounce back. They're resilient. They can become great pets, but it takes effort. It takes patience. It takes time, and time to be with them to really help them come around. But it's doable. And I think one of the great myths is that once a dog has gone through those first 3 months, now there are cases if a dog has been abused, have been treated badly, that's a different story. But for example, the shelter here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the Santa Fe Humane Society, they have a group of behaviorists who work with dogs and who help them become more sociable. So by the time they're ready to be put up for adoptions, they're all great dogs. And I volunteer at the shelter enough to know that that even though shelters are traumatizing, the dogs are so happy to see people and so happy to interact with people, and just they're ready to be adopted. So it is, I think, imperative as a society that we understand that and really look to shelters first rather than breeders to acquire an animal, adopt an animal.
So this takes me to the next idea that I have is I think, okay, what if I adopt a dog from a shelter? Okay, how do I potty train that dog? I mean, I don't have a doggy door here where I live. They doubt that dog would have to be on a leash where I live. They do have a potty place where I live where they can do their duty. How do we do that? What's your advice about that?
I think most shelter dogs, because dogs usually are adopted, they're brought to a shelter. They go through an intake where they're evaluated. What does this dog need? They are then socialized and trained. So by the time they're ready on the adoption side, most of them are housebroken and are ready to be in a house. Now, having said that, it's a traumatic time for a dog.
Yeah.
Especially if dogs have been returned to shelters or been to a shelter a long time. It takes patience and it takes a regular routine of taking a dog out, re-potty training them until they kind of become your dog. But I think the overall point is it's doable. It's not the end of the world. And they are highly, highly resilient.
So what I get from you is consistency, patience, and taking the time. And I know that you suggest that it's not about punishment. It's about reward. So kind of describe your thoughts on that.
Sure. So the prevailing wisdom for a long time was that you punish bad behavior. I remember I was 10 or 11, and I was the one who took our German Shepherd, Shawnee, who was maybe a year old that time, to a training facility, right? A class. And at the time, we put a choke collar on her. And if she did something bad, I was to yank the choke collar and take her down to the ground. Her ears would go down, her tail would tuck under, and she'd be afraid of me, right? But that was the prevailing wisdom on how to train an animal. Since then, we've really understood that punishing an animal has all kinds of unintended consequences, like fear. And I don't know about most dog owners, but I never want my dogs to be afraid of me. So what works more, I think what works better is positive reinforcement, catching a dog doing something right, reinforcing it, and then distracting. So like if your dog jumps up on your mother-in-law, have treats available so that you give the dog treats and the dog sees mother-in-law, associates mother-in-law with treats that you give him, and that'll extinguish that behavior. But punishment is just in general not a good solution to training.
Okay, I'm thinking about another problem that I might have. Okay. As you're convincing me to get a dog in my life. Okay. Mm-hmm. What about barking? That's natural to a dog. They naturally are kind of strangers come to the door. I have UPS and Amazon coming to the door all the time.
Right. Dogs are going to bark. You know, they're going to bark. So I think we have to understand when a dog, it's natural for, because when a dog barks at the UPS person, it's a warning saying, stranger here, what do you want me to do? So I don't think that behavior is going to be easily extinguished. Now, there are ways that you can get to know the UPS guy so that, again, a dog sees UPS, associates him or her with treats because you're giving them treats. So there's a way to distract a dog from barking. But I think the other thing is that to realize and to recognize when a dog barking because they're in distress, because they're upset, because they're scared, versus just kind of the warning bark that there's a stranger here.
Right. So that may or may not be a problem, because like our UPS and Amazon people, they're different every day, you know, and I don't actually even open the door. They just drop them where I live. They just drop the packages off.
Same here.
So they wouldn't even recognize that. But going on to, I want to talk about preparing for disasters, because more and more of us are having to face, you know, whether it's floods or wildfires or, Maui, that was so difficult in Maui. Yeah. There was no warning. There was no preparing for that one.
Right.
And I thought to myself, how many dogs and cats and gerbils and hamsters and snakes and fish and every, you know, all of birds in cages just perished in that fire besides all the people. Or I'm thinking recently in Morocco, same thing. I mean, all the people who died suddenly. But there are many of us that have at least a little bit of a warning that something might be coming. So tell us, what do you have to say about that?
Well, we live in a wildfire area. So in the Southwest, like in California, New Mexico is very prone to wildfires. So we do a couple of things. First, we're very aware during the peak wildfire season, what is going on. So having situational awareness, which means you're paying attention to what's going on. You're not oblivious. That's number one. That's the most important. Second, we have an agreement in our family about in a catastrophe, if we're separated, where we're going to meet, right? And then we have our go list. So we have a post-it in our kitchen, a go list of if we have to get out in an hour, what we're going to take. And then another one that if we have 4 or 5 hours, it's called ready, set, go in New Mexico. And each one, ready means you might have a day to have to evacuate. Go means you have to go now. Or set means you have to get ready to go in 4 hours or less. And our number one in our priorities is take the dogs, get the dogs in the car. That's our number one thing. And then, because everything else in our house we can replace, but we know we need to keep our dogs safe. And we're extraordinarily lucky because my wife and I are both firefighters. So we have that kind of natural situation awareness. And we live in an area where we have an escape route. But I think it's having a pre-plan, knowing where your dogs are or horses are. You know, we have lots of horses in our area. And if there's an imminent fire, you need to have your trailer ready. You need to have your truck hooked up to your trailer and ready to get the horses to go. So it's all that kind of pre-planning that's the most important.
Exactly. And you need to be able to have your, let's say, dogs or animals be used to getting in the car. You don't want to, that's one thing. And I know I had to evacuate not too long ago, several years ago. And I realized that I didn't have my kitty care, my kitty carrying case. It was in deep storage. Right. I don't have a cat now, but now I have it like readily available. These are some of the things we have to think about. I'm here with Hirsch Wilson, and we're talking about our animal companions and how we can be guardians of them in a better way. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Hirsch Wilson, and we're talking about our animal companions. And I know that you speak about how dogs, and probably cats too, they mirror our emotional state. And you, as a firefighter, you often talk about stay calm, stay calm. And here we're living in very tumultuous times and challenging times. Mm-hmm. It's hard to stay calm. Mm-hmm. So give us the advice about how animals reflect us, and when they're acting out, maybe we need to look at ourselves.
Absolutely. Temple Grandin, who is an animal behaviorist and writes a lot about this topic, says, if you want your dog to be calm, you need to be calm. Because dogs reflect back and are kind of charged by our emotions. So to your point, it's like the first thing we need to do is look at ourselves. So my example that I always use is if we're on a walk with our dogs, and all of a sudden up ahead of us is another couple with their dogs, if we get excited and get nervous, right, and pick up Maisie because we're afraid she's going to start barking, well, the dogs are going to ramp up because they think that we're afraid and they need to protect us. But if we're calm and we have a treat bag and treats are going on the ground, and so treats are kind of falling from the sky, it's you have a higher probability of our dogs being relaxed and being okay. And you know, it's with our guys, it's a work in progress. So we've gotten to the point where if we have people walking and I have treats and I'm calm, everything's fine. We're still working on other dogs. When there's other dogs involved, that's still kind of a work in progress. But it starts with us being calm.
Right. There's a wonderful story. Whether you have so many stories in the book, Dog Lessons. I just love this book. And there are so many stories. And one of the stories is, well, first of all, you've been accused by your daughters in your life of being what they call sizist.
Right.
That you had a prejudice about small dogs.
Right.
How did you get over that?
Well, so I grew up with big dogs. I grew up with German Shepherds and then Bernese Mountain Dogs. And then my daughter, who at the time was a medical student, her roommate adopted a Shih Tzu. A small dog, you could hold it, comfortably in both hands. And I was just terrified of the Shih Tzu because I was afraid you'd step on her or lose her. Oh my God, you couldn't take her outside because a hawk would get her. So that was my prejudice. My daughter, Bryn, kept bringing Tallulah over to our house. And we finally got together. I finally got a chance to know Tallulah, kind of interact with her, and realize she was incredibly cute and very friendly. So I kind of thawed. And then what happened with Maisie? Maisie was a street dog that was wandering around Bryn's neighborhood, and Bryn rescued her, as Bryn often does, rescued her. And she could not keep, she had Tallulah and she had a cat named Clover. So she couldn't have another dog in the house because she was a resident at that time. So she called her mom, as you often do in these situations. And the moms and the daughters decided that we should adopt Maisie. So Maisie came in as a 12-pound Chihuahua terrier mix. And she was like any rescue dog. She was terrified at first. She would growl when we tried to pick her up. She would shake sitting on the couch. And we had to be patient with her. And I had to be patient with her. And then everybody realized that I really love Maisie. And being with Maisie during the, at night, she'd sleep with us, and taking her on walks was the highlights of my day. So I lost my prejudice.
She won you over.
She won me over.
She has the heart of a big dog. And
ridiculous.
You tell this great story of she and Toby, Toby is a Bernese too?
No, Toby's a Great Pyrenees.
A Great Pyrenees.
Right.
Toby, this Great Pyrenees, and there's a little tiny Maisie. You're on a walk, and the story of the coyotes.
Right. So we were walking. We have coyotes in New Mexico all over. They're ubiquitous. But we were walking, and two coyotes jumped out on the road and started following us pretty close. And small dogs are susceptible to coyotes. It's a dangerous thing. So our dogs were barking, barking, barking. Toby was howling. And then they wrapped their leashes around my legs. And I dropped Maisie's leash. She went chasing the coyotes up an arroyo with her dragging her leash. So the only thing I could do was kind of release the kraken. which was release Toby and hope he would save Maisie. So he went up the arroyo barking and howling. And then I chased him up the arroyo, and I couldn't find either one of them. So I'm just yelling for Maisie, you know, yelling her name. And then she came running to me with her leash still on, jumped up on me as if to say, I beat them, Dad. I have conquered the coyotes. And so she was fine. And then Toby came back like a couple of minutes later saying, you know, mischief sorted, got rid of them. And so we were fine. But it was a traumatic couple of minutes there for, because I thought I was going to lose Maisie.
Exactly. But you really vividly gave us a picture of the countenance of both of the dogs, like Maisie's. She communicated with her tail wagging or yep. her expression yep. on her face, yep. like, boy, I did it. I just did chased it. A whole her pack of coyotes and aren't I brave? And this is what dogs do. I mean,
yes.
they really, we're able to read them and they are able to read us.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's like a mutual conversation that's happening. I'm thinking of the moment when Bryn was first born, and you had several, at that time, Bernese Mountain Dogs, and you were going to bring the baby home, and that was concerning in some way. I mean, here, these dogs are part of your family, and now you're going to bring this new member. And so how did you bring Bryn home, and how did you do that?
Sure. Well, first of all, my mom was very nervous about us having a brand new baby with three dogs living in the wilderness. And she was not happy that, you know, because a lot of people at that time would have gotten rid of their dogs. But we
you
just,
mean
we
with a new baby coming
with
in
a new
at
baby
that time?
Coming
yeah.
in. Right. We could never do that. So what happened was we drove home that day. And Lori got out of the car holding Bryn, and I was kind of surrounding Lori and Bryn, and the dogs came up and they just sniffed, right? They were fine. They tried to jump up a little bit because there was something new. But then we brought them into the house, and Lori sat down cross-legged on the floor and put Brynny on her lap, this little baby, little infant. And the dogs just laid down on the floor and just sniffed, right? And that's when I went from like paranoid new father, totally paranoid new father, to knowing it was going to be okay. And I think what happened later was Zuni, our dog at the time, just realized his new role was to be with Bryn. So he would follow her as she became a toddler and a six-year-old. He would just follow her everywhere. And they would race up and down the hallway. When we went out to the garden, he would always be right next to Bryn all the time, which was, I think, typical of a dog when there's an infant in the house. Having said that, it's an important thing to remember to never leave a young child alone with a dog, right? That's just because kids have no boundaries and they'll pull tails and stuff like that and they might get bit. So never leave a child alone with a dog. But our dogs were just gracious, loving, and protective.
First, that caution is really, really important. And mm-hmm. so I'm underlining that. Mm-hmm. It's like being responsible as the adult member of the family.
Right.
Being
right.
responsible. And right. and then secondly, the attitude that you had when Bryn was this baby and how Lori, your wife, you both were very calm. You, right. I don't know if it's your Zen practice that helped you to just sort of breathe deeply and be very aware of what was going on, being prepared if you needed to intervene, but you were calm. Does that have something to do with it?
Absolutely. And I think the message the dogs are sending us is, we'll be calm if you're calm, right? And Lori did a magnificent job as a new mom. Because there's nothing like being a brand new mom. There's just nothing in the world like being a brand new mom. But she did just a great job of being calm, of sitting down, of just emanating love for her dogs and for her new baby. And I think that just calmed the dogs down right away. And they were fine. They're smart. They're really smart and they're very empathic. They get it right away.
That's right. When you said emanating love, it's like they pick that up empathically. I love it that you said that they're empathic, because I totally believe that, that they, we can think something and they're just right there with us on it. And we've seen, heard, and read many, many, many stories. Hirsch, I just want to thank you so much for being with us today and helping us to understand and be more receptive to having more dogs in our families, and cats too, but dogs in our families. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been here with Hirsch Wilson, and he is the author of Firefighter Zen, and his newest book, Dog Lessons, Learning the Important Stuff from Our Best Friends. And if you want to know more about his work and his blogs, follow him on hirschwilson.com. And he spells his last name H-E-R-S-C-H, hirschwilson.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3,797.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Dr. Lauren Oliver, author of Circle Culture. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about tools for creating a safe place for beloved community. Hope to see you there.
We really appreciate your generosity. Each year for a week, we host Fundrive, our annual fundraising campaign that boosts our budget and supports independent radio. Thank you for your support.
For the past two decades, CJSF 90.1 FM has been the game-changing radio station people have tuned in to listen, share, discuss, and celebrate. From authors, actors, and entertainers to journalists, business leaders, and sports figures, CJSF has welcomed esteemed guests giving you the best in music, news, and spoken word. undoubtedly changing the sound of community radio since 2003. CJSF, diverse, independent, yours.